thanks to our title sponsor, National University. National University is committed to supporting veterans, active duty personnel, and military families through flexible online courses and master's and doctoral programs in high-demand fields, providing excellent career advancement opportunity. National University is a yellow ribbon school that proudly accepts the post-9/11 GI Bill and goes the extra mile by offering additional assistance to cover expenses that may not be covered by the GI Bill. To learn more, visit nu.edu/veteran.
So our goal with our centennial year is a bit of name brand recognition and make sure that people know about what we're branding your Air Force, RCF 100 branding, so that we can commemorate the past and we can highlight the current generation and then we can inspire the future generation.
Hello and welcome to the Fighter Pilot Podcast. I am your host, Vincent Aiello, and a distinguished visitor joins me today. Lieutenant General Eric Kenny joined the Canadian Armed Forces in 1989 and graduated from the Royal Military College of Canada with a degree in computer engineering. He completed pilot training in 1995 and was selected to fly the CF-188 Hornet. General Kenny served as a Hornet line and instructor pilot and flight supervisor at 433 and 410 Tactical Fighter Squadrons. He held several command positions, including commanding officer of 409 Tactical Fighter Squadron, commander of 4 Wing, and commander of 1 Canadian Air Division, Canadian NORAD region. General Kenny has deployed numerous times and participated in multiple operations. He accumulated 2,900 flying hours, mostly in Hornets. He's a graduate of the NATO Tactical Leadership Program, Fighter Weapons Instructor Course, Canadian Forces College Joint Command and Staff Program, U.S. Air Force Air War College, U.S. Air Force Combined Force Air Component Commander Course, and U.S. Capstone Course. He holds a Master of Defense Studies from the Royal Military College of Canada. He was promoted to Lieutenant General and appointed Commander of the RCAF in August 2022. General Kenny, welcome to the Fighter Pilot Podcast.
Thanks, Vincent. I really appreciate the opportunity to be able to speak about the Royal Canadian Air Force.
Fantastic. Well, before we do, I took some liberties there just now, abbreviating your impressive career. Is there anything I left out that listeners should know before we get going with today's discussion?
Well, I'll start with how I got in the military, if you don't mind. My grandfather and my father were both part of the Royal Canadian Air Force. My grandfather served during the Second World War, flew Catalinas. He would rise up to the rank of group captain, which is equivalent of colonel now, to be the base commander in Goose Bay, back when it was a Canadian and U.S. bomber command base in the 60s. My father joined. He was also a pilot. He flew F-5s and T-Birds and would transition us on to the F-18s when we first received it. So despite all that, it wasn't my initial plans to join the Air Force. I fell into it by getting accepted to the military college, and I've loved it ever since. The other thing I will highlight is I've been fortunate in my career not only to be able to lead the fantastic aviators of the Royal Canadian Air Force, but early on in my career, shortly after arriving on my first unit, to be able to do deployment combat operations over Kosovo. And it really set the foundation for me moving forward as to what the expectations were and what you can do in the Canadian Air Forces and the Royal Canadian Air Force.
Fantastic. Well, I look forward to unpacking some of that today. But specifically, we want to talk about the fact that you, as the commander of the Royal Canadian Air Force, are there when you're celebrating your centennial, 2024. So let's go back, though. What can you tell me about what happened in 1924 and really the years leading up to that that got it all started?
I would love to do that. Now, I'll preface that I am not a historian. So if some of my facts are a little bit off, please excuse me. So let's start before we were formed in 1924. As you've mentioned, 1 April 2024 will be our 100th anniversary for the Royal Canadian Air Force. Usually, we typically start talking about World War I. And at that time, we had a lot of Canadians participating in World War I flying with the Royal Air Force. About a quarter of all the Royal Air Force pilots were Canadians. In fact, 4 of the top 10 fighter pilots were Canadians. As we leave the First World War and we go into the period between the two world wars, that's when the Canadian government agreed to the need for a Canadian Air Force. It was required and developed through a lot of lobbying by the military. And on 20 November 1918, we actually stood up 2 squadrons, 1 and 2 squadron, in the UK. And then shortly after, a year and a half later, we disbanded them, as we're now coming out of the First World War. There's an air board that's created in 1919, whereby control of military and civil aviation is put underneath them, and they recommend that we create a Canadian Air Force. That initial group was a part-time, not professional organization. They're really to provide maintenance training for those who have participated in the First World War to give them the skill sets to continue. And to become a professional Air Force, what we needed was a new pay and allowance and regulations. So that was worked on in 1923. And then early in 1924, the pay and allowance regulation was enacted through an order in council. And on 5 March of 1924, we received approval through the King's regulations and orders to create the Royal Canadian Air Force. And we started it on 1 April of 1924. 1 April being tied to the Royal Air Force. We're not really sure if there is a direct linkage, but a month prior to that is when the King regulations and orders were approved. And the first person in was Wing Commander William George Barker, Victoria Cross, and he was the first director of the Royal Canadian Air Force. And at that time, on 1 April 2024, Camp Borden, which is in Ontario, was the main training facility for the Royal Canadian Air Force. Pilots received the refresher training there. There were specialty courses. All new pilot candidates went through there. In fact, it would be used extensively over the next 10 years until we start to transition our training over to Trenton, Ontario. So we view Camp Borden, now Canadian Forces Base Borden, as the birthplace of the Royal Canadian Air Force, with William Barker as the initial lead of that. As most military see, after a world war or a significant event in security, we ran into a period where there's some budget reductions prior to the Second World War. So we see some reductions equivalent, which lead to about 2/3 of that Air Force being reduced and taking out all the civilian component and just being strictly a military only component. And they start their training at that point. We bring on some new capabilities, some of which are built within Canada. And then we enter into the Second World War.
All right. So that's how it got founded in its first few years. What was the first action or what happens prior to leading up to the Second World War?
So as we lead up to the Second World War, we're a professional force now. We're starting to bring on new aircraft types, many of which are produced in Canada. But it's really the Second World War that propels us forward, as it was for many nations at the time. Canada, being a Commonwealth nation, was very quick to join the war. And at the peak of the Second World War, at least for the Royal Canadian Air Force, we had 215,000 personnel, including 15,000 women's division. And that was on 31 December of 1943. We had 37 squadrons in Canada, 35 squadrons overseas, and 6 squadrons that were en route to England at that time. We were actually the fourth largest Allied Air Force of the war, behind the U.S. Army Air Force, the Royal Air Force, and the Soviet Air Force. Of course, the Luftwaffe had a large Air Force at the time, so fourth largest Allied Air Force at that time. And because Canada was early to join the Second World War, there was many U.S. citizens who joined the Royal Canadian Air Force to participate. In fact, 8,850 of them participated through the Royal Canadian Air Force at the beginning, and some U.S. aces came out from that. I would say during the Second World War, our biggest contribution that we often talk about is the British Commonwealth Air Training Plan, where we worked with Australia, New Zealand, and the Royal Air Force combined to produce 131,000 plus aircrew during that period of the war that were used throughout the conflicts. It involved some help from 4 other nations, specifically the U.S., France, Norway, and Poland, plus some other nations who provided pilots to those 4 other nations. So that was a big lift for us. And just to give you a perspective on that, so at the very height of that British Commonwealth Air Training Plan, December 1943, when we were at our largest size, we had 104,000 personnel in 97 schools, and 184 different units, and 172 airfields running for the British Commonwealth Air Training Plan. And those airfields now have become municipal airports. So that was a really heavy lift for us and a key contribution that we provided to the Commonwealth, but overall to the Allies.
Sounds like it. And as you articulated earlier, really everyone rallied to this cause. It was unlike anything we've seen in our generations. So was there an element of, I know at least on the East Coast, the U.S. had a lot of U-boat patrols and various things. Was the RCAF involved in any of that?
Yeah, we were involved in all the theaters, and many of our aces are from different theaters. We had everything from amphibious aircraft to obviously the standard fighter aircraft that you would have seen at the time, many aircraft produced in Canada and flown throughout the conflict. So we were in the Indo-Pacific region, we're in Europe, we're in Africa. In fact, my grandfather flew in the Indo-Pacific region, flying Catalinas at the time as an amphibious aircraft.
Wow, that's amazing. I want to ask you about the Korean War, but I don't want to jump past World War II too quickly. So is there more to add on that? And was there an involvement in the Korean War?
The Korean War, at that time, we were focused on NATO. As NATO had just been stood up, Canada was a founding member of NATO. In fact, we stood up an air division, which had four wings in Europe. Initially, we had one wing in England, two in France, and one in West Germany. And then we'll eventually transition to have two in France and two in Germany. We had 12 squadrons of F-86s in Europe with the Sabre aircraft as we started that. So when Korea started up, we were not able to provide aircraft directly or squadrons. Instead, what we did is we provided 22 pilots that flew with the U.S. as part of the Korean War. And we also provided a transport squadron to provide lift support back and forth to Korea.
And you talked about NATO. What about the Cold War and NORAD in general?
So the Cold War started off with NATO as a founding member, as I said, which pushed a lot of our assets to Europe. Then we step into NORAD, which was formed on 12 May 1958, as we step into the height of the Cold War. We had been working with the U.S. Air Force and providing aerospace warning and aerospace control within North America against Russian aggression or potential aggression. And that was a key moment because it was and still remains the only binational command in the world where we have fully integrated two nations to do right now aerospace control, aerospace warning and maritime warning, which was a new mission added on more recently, collectively. And so with that became a need for different aircraft. We introduced what we call the CF-100 Canuck. We also had the Sabres that I had mentioned earlier. We transitioned then to F-104s to replace our Canucks and our Sabres. And we bring in CF-101 Voodoos to replace our CF-100s. Then we have a defining moment, which is unification. 1964 and 1966, the Minister of National Defense at that time introduces two acts where he directs to unify the three services into one and no longer exist as separate services. And on 1 February of 1968, the Royal Canadian Air Force ceased to exist and the Canadian Air Forces was unified. This was a very difficult moment for many, as you can imagine. After all those who participated in Second World War and post into NATO and Korea as an example. So this went on for several years. And eventually, the way we started to dig our way out of it is we created an air command. And the architect of that air command created a maritime, mobile, air defense, air transport and training commands, five major commands underneath. And then we started reinvigorating the Air Force. We bought F-18s to replace our Starfighters and our Voodoos. And by the mid-1985, we actually reintroduced our distinctive environmental uniform. The blue uniform came back. So there was a long period of time there from 1968 until 1985 where we were all wearing the exact same uniform, irrespective of what you did for the military. And so lots of pride, as you can imagine, and with great capabilities being reintroduced. And then that kind of brings us to the end of the Cold War.
How about Vietnam? Was there involvement there?
Canada wasn't directly involved in Vietnam, but there was some that went to provide support by getting out of the Canadian military.
Oh, wow. And Desert Storm?
Yeah, Desert Storm. We were fully involved in Desert Storm. That's our first major conflict after the end of the Cold War. We sent F-18s. We also had transport aircraft provided there in support to the maritime presence. Our F-18s did sweep and escort, and they also did some strike missions while they're participating in the Gulf War.
And then I think we're almost to modern day. I guess the War on Terror has been going on a couple of decades now, and I have to think this is where you showed up as a younger pilot. But how about the involvement in Afghanistan and Iraq?
So after the 9/11 attacks, we were fully committed, as was the U.S., in particular in Afghanistan. Most of our platforms participated at some point in Afghanistan. The ones that you would have seen the most would have been our C-130s, as well as our Bell 412s, which we call Griffin helicopters. We purchased some used Chinooks that we brought online in Afghanistan. We also participated in training missions and use of the Mi-17s at the time with Afghanistan Army Air Corps. And then we were involved with a CP-140, which is our P-3. We call it a CP-140. which went and did some mapping. And so we had different assets to include our Airbus, passenger transport. We never sent fighters over to that war in terror in Afghanistan. We were there for 14 years. Many of us rotated through there doing different roles.
Well, we've taken a fun little journey back through the last century, General, and you've mentioned some of the aircraft, some of the bases, some of the numbers that have been involved in the RCAF that whole time. As we come to the present, 2024, what can you tell me about some of those same topics? Number of bases, number of people, different kinds of aircraft. Where are we at today, 100 years later?
So the Royal Canadian Air Force, when you count our regular force, reserve force, and our public servants collectively, accounts for about 18,000 positions. We're currently filling about 15,000 of those 18,000 positions. Most of our shortage in people right now is in our regular force. We're about 2,000 people short of our establishment. We have 15 wings. We have three divisions, one Canadian Air Division, which does readiness and operations, two Canadian Air Division, which is our training authority for all the new ab initio training, and then three Canadian Space Division, which is a new authority that we took on in the last couple of years, and we stood that up in the summer 2022. So all air and space falls under the Royal Canadian Air Force. And the fourth component, which I did not mention, was the Royal Canadian Air Force Aerospace Warfare Center. So with those 15 wings, anything effectively that flies belongs to the Royal Canadian Air Force, except for smaller UAVs, as well as some rotary wing aircraft that Special Forces use. They're the same platform that we have. We provide the pilots and the maintainers to go there, but they overall retain command of those platforms. So as an example, when we send our maritime helicopters to support the Navy, their Air Force is responsible to force generate them. And then we come over to the Navy, all our Bell 412s, our Chinooks that we have in the Air Force, we send them over to support the Army as required or Special Forces.
And where are we at with fighters today? This being the Fighter Pilot Podcast, I feel I have to ask that one.
Yeah, so obviously an exciting announcement a year ago, January 2023, that Canada fully committed as a partner nation to purchase 88 F-35 Alphas, Block 4s. First four aircraft will be delivered in 2026, going to Luke Air Force Base, which is where we'll do the training as a combined U.S. Air Force, Royal Canadian Air Force squadron. And then current projections have us bringing the F-35s to Canada in 2028 to be initial capable by 2029, 2030, and all 88 delivered by about 2033. Our F-18s, we have 88 F-18s right now. Half of them, or 36 to be more specific, are undergoing an upgrade. We're getting new radars put into them, a whole bunch of new missiles being added to them, which will allow us to bridge the gap until we can bring the F-35 on fully. So we're going to go from 88 F-18, some of which are being modernized with active electronic scan array radars and new missiles, and have them retire by 2032.
As the commander of the Royal Canadian Air Force, do you still get to fly the F-18?
I haven't flown the F-18 since I was a wing commander. My last flight was June of 2016. Having said that, I flew for almost 18 years, and I love my time in the F-18, and I got to participate in many different operations. So although I love getting back in the cockpit and flying, I also know that our newest aviators and pilots need more stick time than I do. So, and it's not close to Ottawa where we fly our F-18s. It's in Cold Lake, Alberta, and Bagotville, Quebec. So it is a bit of a jaunt to get there.
But they say rank has its privilege. I mean, it's only another 100 hours and you could get the coveted 3,000-hour patch. So anyway, well, all right. So is there something magical or just coincidental about the number 88? I think, did I hear you correctly? 88 F-35 and 88 F-18s? I mean, is that, where's that come from?
So when we were looking at the number of jets that we require, we looked at the number of jets required to do the NORAD mission, which is prescribed to us by NORAD. Then we added on the number of jets that we've committed to do NATO missions. You take availability, serviceability, third line maintenance, and you get to the magical number of 88. And so it's done so we can, assuming we have enough people, you can maintain simultaneous the full NORAD commitment while maintaining the full NATO commitment.
And forgive me for even asking, does that also include some degree of attrition? Or if there is a mishap, is there another one added?
Good question. It does not account for attrition. And I recognize that, you know, you typically fly a fighter for 40 plus years. And so, you know, there's always that option, especially as a partner nation within the F-35 program, which we've been part of for over 20 years to look at that. So in the past 14 months, the Royal Canadian Air Force has signed 5 significant contracts to modernize our force, worth $44 billion Canadian, delivering 138 new platforms. And we're hopefully, all things appear to be going well, going to sign another contract here by the summer timeframe, worth about $15 billion to bring on 71 more aircraft, 5 different types. Just to give you a sense of scale, that is half of our fleets will be replaced in the next few years with these contracts. And I haven't talked about the current introduction of the fixed-wing search and rescue aircraft, the C-295. I haven't talked about what we're doing to upgrade our Bell 412s and some other ongoing initiatives, nor have I talked about fighter lean-in training, which we're going to bring in as well, or the C-130J Block 8.1 that we're introducing. So the 5 major announcements in December of 2022, we announced that we're purchasing 16 new Cormorant helicopters to do the rotary wing search and rescue. We called it a midlife upgrade. It's to replace 13 of the helicopters that we have right now doing that mission set. And we'll bring in 16. It's actually a new hull that's going to go with a few parts from the current Cormorants, hence a midlife update, but really it's a new helicopter with new search capability. It's based on what the Norwegians are using for their rotary wing search and rescue. And it is a move from the current platform we have, which is already a great capability. Then we announced the F-35 deal in January. Past summer, we announced that we're buying 9 A330s and multi-role tanker transports, 8 of which will be tanker configured, 1 of which will be VIP configured. Those 8 tankers are going to replace the 2 tankers we have right now that are A310s. So it's a significant increase in tanker capacity. And we're going to go from a fleet of 5 A310s to a fleet of 9 A330s. The A330 is 50% bigger, so it's a pretty big jump for us. Then we announced just a couple months ago at the end of November that we're buying 14 P8s to replace our CP-140s, or what most people would refer to as P3s. So we're replacing 14 CP-140s with 14 P8s being delivered between 2026 and 2027. And then in December, we announced that we're buying 11 MQ-9 Bravo Sky Guardians. We don't even have that capability right now, so it's actually a brand new capability that we're bringing in. We don't currently have a remotely piloted aircraft system within the Canadian Armed Forces. And so for the Air Force, that's going to be a new capability. It's a really interesting capability. We'll be the first ones. The Brits are getting it as well. We'll be the first ones to fly it in the Arctic. So there'll be some developmental work looking at Starlink as the way we're going to connect it. But it's coming with, as you can imagine, SIGINT radar, EOIR plus weapons. We're buying Hellfires and 500-pound bombs to go with that capability so we can support combat operations worldwide. And then, as I hinted at, I'm looking forward to having a future aircrew training program contract by the summer timeframe, which will replace all our aircrew training platforms. So 5 new fleets of aircraft, just over 70 aircraft total that will replace all our current fleets. So that's over 200 aircraft to replace our current 400 aircraft. And they're all arriving between 2026 and 2029 with full capabilities by the mid-2030s for all of them.
That's really amazing. And as I think back, at least in the American military, we had, beginning in 2013, let's say, a lot of just challenges politically with sequestration and just different issues. Then we had, of course, the economy that was challenging, as well as COVID. And so a lot of things I feel like now are just sort of starting to catch up from the last decade. And I'm curious, and I'm not necessarily asking you to opine about the politics, but I'm curious, with all this that you just described, is because we're maybe catching up for lost time, or is it just that there's an appetite now to infuse some funds, dare I say, an aircraft into the military? Or is it that maybe there's a new significant threat that we're beginning to consider versus what we've done for the last 20 years?
So it's a combination of those statements. As you would recall, and as we just discussed, after the end of the Cold War, there's the peace dividend. Then we got into counter-violent extremist organizations. Think of what we're doing in Afghanistan, Iraq, and Syria. And was there a need to have capabilities that can do continental defense? Was there a need to have capabilities that can do up to combat or conflict against peer adversaries? And the thought at the time was maybe not. And so decisions were made. There was budget implications at the time. What changed for us was in 2017, our government released a new defense policy called Strong, Secure, Engaged. And within that, and then more recently to the changing security situation since 2017, there was an announcement on NORAD modernization in the summer of 2022. When you take those two, the defense policy of 2017 and what was announced in 2022, and you add up the capital acquisitions within it, 57% of the capital acquisitions go to the Air and Space Force. And because of the timelines for acquisitions and where projects are, the Air Force is now benefiting from that, and all these contracts are being rolled out. So it wasn't because in the last 2 years we decided to do this. It's actually started prior to 2017. The defense policy of 2017 is what really kicked this off. And there's several more to be delivered. And NORAD modernization gave us a significant uplift announced in 2022. So as an example, we were initially going to buy 5 or 6 A330s. And then NORAD modernization provided us additional funding and an additional mandate to be able to hold air refueling postures, standby postures in Canada to support NORAD, which gave us an additional 4 A330s as part of that uplift, specifically in the tanker role. So we're the beneficiaries of decisions that have been made in the past and funding streams that are now being unlocked as we move forward.
And as we think about the 100th celebration here for the Royal Canadian Air Force, and you are fortunate to be in the seat when that's happening, what are some of the events that are being held or scheduled to commemorate? And as listeners hear this, some of these might be in the past, but as you and I are recording, some of this might still be coming. But what's in store for this big year?
So our goal with our centennial year, and of course, we've taken lessons from the Royal Air Force, the Royal Australian Air Force, the Italian Air Force, who just finished their 100th anniversary celebrations, to see what is best. So as we developed our campaign, one of the things we did is we showed the RCF Rondel. We did a survey with Canadians to see how many people recognized the RCF Rondel. Unfortunately, the percentage of people, Canadians, who recognized the Rondel was quite low, and they saw it as something different. So one of the things that we want to do is a bit of name brand recognition and make sure that people know about what we're branding Your Air Force, specifically to Canadians. So we're using Your Air Force with our logo, and we've put that as part of our RCF branding as well, RCF 100 branding, so that we can commemorate the past and we can highlight the current generation, and then we can inspire the future generation. There is a recruiting nexus and attraction nexus that goes with that. But I think when you look at air and space, and I'll pivot quickly, space, we have two Canadian astronauts who are Royal Canadian Air Force pilots, Jeremy Hansen, Josh Kutrick, one of whom is going to go around the moon on Artemis II, and the other one's going to go up in the International Space Station in the next 2 years. Lots of excitement as we move forward. So with that as a theme, and with recognition that we want to get across Canada, we have a lot of local events that are occurring since we're in many areas of Canada, pretty much all the provinces and territories except for two. Lots of local events that will be occurring. But the national events, of course, we had the tie to National Hockey League. Hockey is a big thing in Canada. We kicked it off with the Winnipeg Jets in December timeframe, where they unveiled a jersey from the Royal Canadian Air Force Flyers, who were celebrating their 75th anniversary. They were a team of Royal Canadian Air Force members right after the war who went to the Olympics in 1948 in Switzerland and won the gold medal. And so we unveiled that. There'll be a lot of what we call mess dinners or formal dinners that will be occurring around 1 April of 2024. That is Easter Monday, which for Canada is a day where you don't typically do a lot of celebrations. So the mess dinners will be on the front and back end of that. I think I'm going to 6 mess dinners so far in the March-April timeframe, and very much looking forward to doing that. As we step a little bit closer into the summer, we're going to be doing an Air and Space Power Symposium at the end of May. We have a big gala ball that we're doing in Ottawa. The tickets sold out in an hour. And then we're going to be, of course, doing air shows all across Canada. Snowbird's aerobatic team is be front and center, as well as our F-18 demo. Has a new paint scheme for this year, which will be showcased throughout, and we're going to encourage our members to get out there. Where we typically do our air shows at our wings, sometimes every 2 years, we've aligned them all to occur this year. And we have partnered with the Canadian Mint, we've partnered with Canada Post, and there's coins coming out, and there's a whole bunch of different activities that'll be unveiled. From an international perspective, we're going to go to the Royal International Air Tattoo in the UK in July timeframe. And we've partnered with them, one, to showcase the RCAF for our 100th anniversary at the Royal International Air Tattoo, but we're going to do an event at the High Commission, we call it our embassy in London, the week prior to that, where we're going to invite all air and space power chiefs and their partners to come with us to celebrate our 100th anniversary event. So different things throughout the year, and I think there'll be many opportunities to highlight the Royal Canadian Air Force. The goal at the end of this is that Canadians know more about your Air Force, and they know not only what we do now, but what our history has been and where we're going. And I think we'll be very successful. I'm very much looking forward to it and very privileged and honored to be able to command at that time.
Indeed. Well, and that is why we're happy to partner with you here as well, not just to learn about everything that you just spent some time sharing, thank you, but to help get the word out. And on that note, you mentioned recruiting earlier, and then even before that, you mentioned having some gaps in manning. And I wonder what you might tell a young woman or man who might be listening to this or might visit at one of these events, that why that person should select or think about or consider a career in the Royal Canadian Air Force.
When we do our recruitment in Canada, it's done by a central organization within the Canadian Armed Forces. So the Air Force doesn't recruit its own members. We provide a demand signal, as does the Army and Navy. And so I say that because when you look at how the numbers play out, typically the Air Force does the best when it comes to recruitment. In other words, people want to join the Air Force more, or at least they're more likely to join through the Air Force trades than they are in other trades. We're pushing a lot of the attractions aspects to make sure people understand what we do. But the future is extremely bright. The Air Force of 2035 is not the Air Force of today. It's going to be an extremely capable Air Force, credible Air Force. We need the people to be able to actually enact that. So I know what the Air Force of 2035 looks like. It's been decided. I know where the money is flowing, when it's flowing in, and what we're buying for the most part, or at least what it's going to look like. Now we need to enable that with the people capability and really propel us forward, because we have to. The world security situation mandates it. And unfortunately, I feel like we're not in a position to provide credible deterrence against a peer adversary, and we need to get there as quickly as possible. We're going to focus initially on continental defense as our number one mission. And with the current delivery schedule of our capabilities, we will actually be able to do that very effectively, but without an ability to have an operational advantage or overmatch against peer adversaries, we won't provide the deterrence effects that our government and our Canadian citizens require. So please, if you wish to join what will be a really exciting time for the Royal Canadian Air Force, you will see a force that will be capable to not only meet the current threat, but exceed it. But we won't do it without you.
General Kenny, as we approach the summer of 2024, you'll be 2 years in that seat, in that rank. How much longer, and what's the future for you?
Typically, the commander of the Royal Canadian Air Force fills about a three-year mandate, but we don't have it set in stone. If I look back at previous commanders, the Lieutenant General Meinzinger, who I replaced, was in for 4 years. I think he's the only one that made it that long. Most have been in for 3 years. So my expectations is 3 years in the job, but you never know. As we rotate through our what we call our Vice Chief of Defense Staff and Chief Defense Staff, your Chairman equivalent and Vice Chairman equivalent, that causes some changes. So I'm anxious to find out myself, but my goal is to stay in place for a third year and really propel us forward, because these announcements have not only created a buzz, but there's going to be a lot of work that's required to be able to transition quickly to these capabilities, because we have to, and without enough people to do it. So making some difficult decisions on how we're going to do that. And it's important, I think, to have a continuity as we move forward.
Well, we have a tradition here on the Fighter Pilot Podcast to ask about call signs. Now, I'm guessing you're used to being called General or Sir, but if you and I were back in the F-18 cockpit, by the way, I was winging around 95 as well. So it's good to see in a parallel universe where I could be if I wasn't just doing what I'm doing. But anyway, if you and I were in F-18s, you might call me Jello. I might call you Slice. So are you willing to share how someone came up with the call sign Slice for Eric Kenny?
Sure. I wish it was a great story. It's, I don't think, overly exciting. But when I was doing my fighter lead-in training prior to going on to F-18s, we were doing it in Moose Jaw at the time. We had just retired the F-5. And so we were in between platforms. So I did it on the Tudor aircraft. We did that for a couple of years until we brought the Hawks in. So I was in Moose Jaw doing my fighter lead-in training on the Tudor aircraft. And one night managed to cut myself up by my hand quite good, multiple stitches, and had to be grounded for 2 weeks from my flying course, managed to catch back up and complete it on time. But my instructors and my cohort students all decided to call me Slice of the Time. And the risk there is that could change as you move further forward. And there was other opportunities, names that were thrown out. But one of our traditions, and I don't know if you were to look back and if it holds all the way through time, but once you go to combat, then you can't have your call sign changed. So I got to go to combat early on with Allied Force in Kosovo. And so whenever they tried to change my call sign on me, it stuck. So that was what I used to keep it.
I see. And I don't think you mentioned it or I missed it. What was the instrument of slicing your hand? Was it part of the aircraft?
No.
Moving on. Very good. All right. Well, General Kenny, this has been a lot of fun. Any final thoughts on the Royal Canadian Air Force for the last 100 years? And if you're willing, maybe even take a guess at the next 100. We've certainly talked about RCAF 2035, but what have I not asked you?
I think we've covered the vast majority. When you look back at our history, being the fourth largest Allied Air Force at Second World War to where we are now, and what's ebbed and flowed over time, what hasn't changed is the people. And we've had incredible aviators throughout our history, and many of which are talked about and still are around with us. And so we need to celebrate those who have served their country. And going forward, I know that we'll be successful because of people, those that are currently serving and the people that will come after us. The future is very bright. And as an air and space force, with an undergoing a significant modernization effort, I think this is the time to make sure that we can recognize that. I do very much, when I talk to my counterparts, whether it be in the US Air Force, Space Force, or other nations, I believe that we will have a very credible force. We just need time to get there. So with that said, really appreciate the opportunity to spell out where we've been and where we're going. And I look forward to talking at a future time and engaging with all people that wish to talk about the Royal Canadian Air Force.
Indeed. Well, Lieutenant General Eric Kenny, Commander, Royal Canadian Air Force, thank you so much for joining us here on the Fighter Pilot Podcast.
Thanks so much, Vincent.
You've been listening to the Fighter Pilot Podcast, the internet show that explores the fascinating world of air combat. Visit our website, fighterpilotpodcast.com, for a blog, a glossary of the terms used on this show, and a shop page featuring unique military aviation-themed books and apparel. Check out our YouTube channel to watch hundreds of military aviation-themed videos. And for exclusive content, head on over to our Patreon page. Thanks for listening.
Thanks to our title sponsor, National University. National University is committed to supporting veterans, active duty personnel, and military families through flexible online courses and master's and doctoral programs in high-demand fields, providing excellent career advancement opportunity. National University is a yellow ribbon school that proudly accepts the post-9/11 GI Bill and goes the extra mile by offering additional assistance to cover expenses that may not be covered by the GI Bill. To learn more, visit nu.edu/veteran.